My brother keeps a human head in his closet. I hope I don't end up that way.
This thing, it's gonna follow you. Somebody gave it to me. And I passed it to you. It could look like someone you know, or it could be a stranger in a crowd. It could look like anyone.
Help! Santa Claus only brings presents to them that's been good all year. To the ones that ain't done nothing naughty. All the other ones. All the naughty ones. He punishes. You see Santa Claus tonight, you better run, boy. You better run for your life.
Bring me one of those chickens.
You got money to pay for it?
You paid for it.
No, but we're the king's men. So, you got money?
Not a penny. I'll still take that chicken.
You don't seem to understand the situation.
I understand that if any more words come pouring out your mouth, I'm going to have to eat every chicken in this room.
You lived your life for the king. You're gonna die for some chickens.
Someone is.
The symbol is associated with a pagan deity named Bagul. He consumes the souls of human children. Early Christians believed that Bagul actually lived in the images themselves and that they were gateways into his realm.
I am seriously positive these were not here. How would we have, just made a campsite in between three piles of rocks just by coincidence?
You don't think this is strange?
Hello, welcome once again to Dark Discussions, your place for the discussion of horror, film, fiction, and all that's fantastic. I am one of your co-hosts, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire in the US of A, and with me in the state of Michigan.
This is Eric.
Hey, Eric, how are you?
I am both fine and dandy. How are you?
Doing pretty good, I guess. Yeah, generally. I mean, it's good as it gets, is how I say it.
So. Like Jack Nicholson?
Exactly. Exactly. And in the Commonwealth of Virginia.
Hey, this is Barrett.
Barrett, how are you?
I'm doing well.
Excellent. We usually have some other co-hosts, but the other usual Mike from New York is on a call with
his Microsoft. Favorite company.
Yes. So he's working on that, trying to get some fixes. I don't know if he's ever talked about it on any of the episodes, but offline.
Details aren't worth it. Just move on.
Yeah. So
he's
so,
unavailable. Yeah.
Yes. He's on a help call right now. So, yeah, he's unavailable. So we decided to go anyway, because we all, or the three of us, have watched the topic for tonight. So for folks who are curious, tonight is September 9th, 2021. For folks who are curious when we record, because I know some listeners like Pam happen to be curious when we record our episodes, because sometimes they come out later than the following week. So with that, I guess we can get into some other house cleaning, which is the website is darkdiscussions.com. It is a website that is an all news network, which has multiple podcasts, release notices, articles, reviews, even Eric's Movie Corner videos are linked up there where you can find them on YouTube or just on darkdiscussions.com. And we do have an email called darkdiscussions@aol.com, or just press the contact us link in the menu and on the website, and that will open up an email where you can email us as well. We will read your emails on the podcast if you so send them, and those topics can be anything from what we've just discussed recently, a movie that you're interested in, a movie that you've seen that you want to give a little review on, or any other news or comments or feedback, and we will read it on the podcast. We also have a Facebook group called Dark Discussions Podcast Facebook group, and you can follow us on Twitter and other places. Now, Eric, what else can people find on the darkdiscussions.com website?
Well, they can find a link to our Patreon page. Patreon is a service that allows you to financially contribute to our online artists like us, producing this show is not free. We have to pay for things like website hosting and file serving and domain fees and computer equipment, not to mention renting movies. So any and all contributions are certainly appreciated. You can go to dark. Let me try that again. You can go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions. And for every $5 a month that you care to donate, you'll have the opportunity to submit a topic for us to possibly do a show on. We take all the submissions from our patrons and we draw one at random on a quarterly basis. So if that is something that you would be interested in doing, you can go to darkdiscussions.com and follow the link on any page there.
Excellent. And that would be greatly appreciated, as Eric mentioned. And thank you for those who do contribute. All right. So that's pretty much all we got for house cleaning. So I guess we can probably get into our topic tonight. So, Eric, why don't you let everybody know what we're going to discuss tonight?
Tonight, we're going to be talking about the 2021 release Gaia.
I saw something out there. Someone.
The largest organism on the planet lives right here. Growing. Waiting. And it's ready to spread.
Safe when any boys.
V.
And he da. Kali means that he do it sook. En het bevind nie. Verken alleen maar van oordaad. En verorbering. En nog, en nog. Het trop apen. Die brandende berg uitklim om weg te kom van die vloedwaters wat hulle wil verswelg. Het zwerm springkane wat om die aarde vlieg. Al sneller en sneller. En jy, denk jy kan hulle red. Sy was hier lang voor die apen begin drome van gode.
That's right. Gaia is a South African horror film. It is directed by Jaco Bouwer, or Bouwer, if you prefer. Screenplay by Tertius Kopp. And it stars Monique Rockman, Karel Nell, Alex Van Dyke, and Anthony Osiyemi. The film is getting good reviews on such websites as Rotten Tomatoes, where it's at about 82%, and has been noticed by many important websites as well, such as RogerEbert.com or Variety, for example, Slant Magazine, and AV Club, and so on and so forth. So it's gotten a larger notice than most smaller films or foreign films for that matter. The film has recently come out, I think it was just a couple of months ago, and I'll actually get the date here. It says March 16th. It appeared at South by Southwest, and then after that received a full release, which came out on June 18th of 2021. So it's a couple of months we're behind. So I guess we can probably now move on to how we heard about this film and what we thought about it. And so I guess I'll start. Actually, we were trying to determine a topic for this week because our other topic that we probably have to do next week, we wanted to coordinate with a possible special co-host to join us, so we needed to choose a different film. And we went through a number of films that are on Apple iTunes, and as I was reading a bunch of titles off, Eric immediately said, oh, that film is good. Gaia is a good film. So we all said, all right, let's do it. So I went in blind, did not read the trailer, read the IMDb or listen to the trailer, watch the trailer, whatever. And I was, so first of all, surprised that it was a South African film. I had no idea that it was a foreign film. But second, it was a really good film. Eric was correct. This film is a really good film. It's actually interesting that Mike hasn't joined us for this episode because there's some surreal moments that and dream moments that may have not been the type of film that would make him like it. But I really liked it. I felt the acting was solid. The monster aspect or supernatural aspect of the film was pretty cool. I liked the national park setting that is in the middle of nowhere. I felt that everything about the film was really good. So I would give it a thumbs up. Let's go with you, Eric.
Well, I just stumbled across this film while I was stumbling through. Every Tuesday and Friday, I just kind of scan through iTunes to see what's new. And this showed up in front of me. And I found the title and the cover art to be intriguing enough to give it a watch. And I really enjoyed this movie. I thought it was well acted. There are some incredible visuals in this movie, which I really enjoyed. And there's a little bit of a message in the movie too, which I can't say I disagree with. So yeah, this movie is not going to be for everybody. There's only four people in the whole movie. It's mostly just two people talking to each other at any given moment. So if that doesn't sound like your thing, you might want to skip this one. However, it is set in the forest, like Phil was saying. There's some incredible nature shots as well as I don't think Phil used the word supernatural. That wouldn't be the word that I would use, but I'll talk about it more after spoiler flag is up. So I really enjoyed this movie. It was a pleasant surprise for something I wasn't even on my radar.
All right, sounds good. Barrett.
Yeah, I heard about this last week when we were talking about seeing the next movie, and I really enjoyed this movie. I thought it was really great. The opening cinematography is just amazing. It's probably one of my favorite scenes in a movie. And just the story is really good. It's an interesting movie and very creepy, for me. And yeah, it's very enjoyable. I give it two thumbs up.
All right. Very good. Yeah. It is an interesting film because it is an art house kind of horror film, because of the topics and all that stuff. And Eric mentioned there's a message that can be missed. But it is there. And then it's also kind of a grindhouse film because it has the nudity, the monsters, the violence, and various other things too that would attract the midnight movie crowd as well. And yet it may not be good for either type. It just has to be the type of film, I think, that works for you. And as you can see, all three of us thought it was pretty good. All right. So, Eric, do we have a wiki?
An injured forest ranger on a routine mission is saved by two off-the-grid survivalists. What is initially a welcome rescue grows more suspicious as the son and his renegade father reveal a cultish devotion to the forest.
All right.
I think that's a really good one, actually.
Yeah. I like it. Yeah. All right. That's good. I like that better than some other verbiage on the film where people were saying two people post-apocalypse lifestyle and stuff.
Because
it really doesn't.
I don't like that either.
Not post-apocalyptic at all.
Right. No. But the two
pre-apocalyptic.
Survivalists
were living a post-apocalyptic lifestyle is what I read, and I was like,
That just gives the idea that it's post-apocalyptic, and it just doesn't fit.
Yeah, it's still silly, but that one's much better than the one that Eric read.
Yeah, it's the rare good IMDb synopsis.
Yeah, exactly. Now, unfortunately, the title of the film is probably the number one thing that will keep people from seeing it because it's almost hard to pronounce. But oddly, it's not a weird name at all. It's actually the Greek goddess for Earth.
Mother Earth, right?
Yeah. So you have Earth, which is the name of Earth, you know, the Earth god. And then Gaia is the Greek name for that god, while the Roman name was Terra. So, you know, terraforming, Terra. So it's basically named after Earth as a living supernatural being, in a sense. But as Eric said, the supernatural is it depends on that terminology. But the point is that the movie is talking about something about Earth that could be, the message. We'll get into that. Also, this film kind of reminded me of the Super Deep, because it kind of has the same type of creature.
Collection Tundra?
Yeah, well, the same type of creature, which is, I won't say the creature.
Oh, okay, I kind of see where you're going with that.
Yeah, there you go. You know what I'm talking about. So, we will get into that during the spoilers. But for people who are newer to the podcast, we are a review podcast. But besides reviewing, we critique and dissect the movie. So we talk about anything and everything that our fancy, I guess. And so we will get into spoilers and talk about specifics. But we will do that after we get into the spoiler section, and we will throw out a spoiler warning before we do. Another interesting thing for this film is that the film is dual language. It's South Africa has a number of official languages, but the Caucasian folk specifically have two languages, English and Afrikaans. And Afrikaans is a Germanic or Dutch language. It comes from the Netherlands, or Dutch folk who settled South Africa hundreds of years ago. And the language that was formed after they left the Netherlands and were so far away from the Netherlands, they actually created their own Germanic language called Afrikaans, spelled with a K and double A in the Afrikaans. So this movie has both English and Afrikaans in it, and 50% of the film, I would say, is African, so it is dubbed 50% of the time.
I don't know if it's as much as 50, but it's a significant portion.
Yeah. I may have overstated, but yeah, it is definitely a significant portion. So just a heads up there.
I'll say that the scenes, Carl Nell is the main one who speaks Afrikaans, and he has a couple of rants he does in Afrikaans that I just thought were tremendous. In my opinion, some of the best moments of the movie is when he's just fucking going off in Afrikaans. That was awesome.
That one huge speech was really awesome.
Yeah. The screenwriting here is pretty solid by Tertius Kopp, and it also was performed well by the actors, especially as Eric and Barrett mentioned, Carell Nell, who gives those speeches. And sometimes they kind of could have felt with a weaker actor as maybe exposition, but with a great actor like this guy, they're phenomenal. Absolutely.
Oh yeah.
And so you may have been getting to this, but I want to say it because it's fun to say. For anybody who's curious, this was filmed in the Tsitsikamma forest in South Africa. Yes, I just like to say Tsitsikamma.
That's right. And I believe it's the because we were S, the river. What the hell's the river's name? Damn it.
The Nile?
No. It's the river is Storms River. Storms River. Yeah, I think that's
right. Okay.
Yeah. So the Storms River, and this national park is like huge. So, you know, think of some of the big national parks in the United States for those listeners from the United States, or in Australia for our Australian listeners, and so on and so forth. So we're talking like miles and miles and miles of national forests that people never go to. These are monsters. For those who live in the States, we're talking about as big as Delaware or maybe even bigger. All right, so I think that's pretty much some good setup there. What other things do we want to talk about before we throw out any spoiler alerts? Anything about the film itself or the topics. Like, obviously, they're talking about ecology or environmental issues.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, I felt it didn't suppress the enjoyment of the film, because sometimes when you get preachy films, they go way overboard. But here, I didn't feel that was the case. It was used perfectly.
Yeah, I think that's because it was part of the character's makeup, not necessarily a message the movie was pushing.
Right. Well, and it's both. The movie is pushing a message, but the character who in the movie is the, well, for lack of a better term, let's say the caretaker of that message. The actor is so good, he makes you believe that he believes, and therefore when he delivers it, it's not like a preachy kind of thing. It's like, this guy is borderline psychotic. He is a zealot, and he 100% believes in everything that he's saying.
Yeah,
right. And I think that's good too, because it makes him a narrator that may have behavioral health issues. So you can take what he says either literally and correct, or over the top and a little too far. And I think
answer by the end of the movie.
Well, and let me explain. When I say message, I mean it's not trying to convert you to a way of thinking. In this
That's
movie,
true.
I don't tell you, he's trying to tell you what's up.
He is, right. Yes, but the movie itself is not trying to say, "Hey, we need to work on the world. Everybody needs to work on the world."
Right. Well, and it's also and also the message it's saying isn't, even though he's going on about society and all these other things, and that's fine, because a lot of what he says is partially true.
What he says is right.
Yeah, exactly.
at least partially true. But the thing is the reason, if anything does go bad, it's just bad luck because people stumbled upon it. It's not because man decided to do something necessarily truly stupid. It's just that the world is bigger than we know, and things can happen. That, you know, it's like an earthquake. You know, it just happens. You know, and if you stumble upon what's in this forest, it just happens. So it's not like man finds it and says, "Oh, we're going to use something as a military weapon, like an alien." And whoops, it slipped out and it kills everybody. it's just bad luck.
Well, I see where you're coming from, but if you've listened to what that one character is saying, it's more intentional than that.
Yeah.
Well, and I guess we can get into it.
Yeah, I'm trying to be very careful. Pre-spoiler flag.
Yeah, yeah, and I don't necessarily agree with his full explanation of intentional or not, but
well, it's a fictional story, so we kind of got to take his word for it.
Yeah, right. But I mean, you know, I mean, obviously, it's trying to pretend that it's part of the a film that's part of the real world. We're not talking ghosts and all that stuff like in some films we've seen.
Well, I have some trivia for post spoiler that we'll see.
All right, sounds good.
I will enlighten you.
Okay, sounds good. Let's see. What else did we want to talk about? I was kind of glad they didn't have any animals in the film, because they could have had, like, tigers or not tigers. There's no tigers in Africa. But whatever.
I guess you're just saying crocodile or whatever.
Yeah. They didn't have these little red herrings or action scenes just to make the film more exciting. They stuck right on target to what they were trying to get, which was the four characters and the nature around them. Mm-hmm. I thought that.
And frankly, what was going on in this movie to me is way more terrifying than a tiger, because at least you know where a tiger is coming from. You can see a tiger. You can fight a tiger. You might lose, but you can fight it. at least you know what you're dealing with there when it's a tiger, right?
Yep.
Right. So I mean, the issue with this creature or this issue or this natural thing or this monster or this phenomenon, whatever you want to call it, because, you know, we're not in spoilers, is similar to I don't think it was intentional, but it could be an analogy to COVID for Pete's sakes. You know, this movie.
Well, I actually have a piece of trivia there, which is what it wasn't intentional, but most of the people involved, like, this movie got shut down after like 2 weeks of shooting because of COVID, and the similarities there really freaked out a lot of the people involved with the movie.
Gotcha. And also it falls the zombie film too, you know, and mm-hmm. that's a virus too. So there's or disease or whatever you want to call it. So there's a lot of things that this film is a good analogy to, whether it was intentional or not.
Yeah.
So I thought that was kind of interesting as well. I do like dropping off the grid because they're just fed up with life or bad luck. And, you know, behavioral health may eventually make people fall off the grid, but there's reasons why. Maybe
it's mental health.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Or you know, enough is enough. And you know, me, Eric, and Barrett all just seen a film completely different than this film called Pig, where someone has some really bad things that happen to them, uh-huh. Nicolas Cage film, and they decide to go off the grid. And you think that the character is mentally ill or behavioral health issues, which may be the case, but maybe not. It may be, like you said, Eric, they're just trying to deal with a terrible world in their way, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think that was an interesting aspect as well to this film here. How people decide to leave the grid because they're just fed up with everything. Assuming the story is true, because the reason they go is something to do with one of our main characters' wife, and we're assuming that's true. Anything else anybody wanted to bring up before we throw up spoilers and stuff? There could be a lot of more things we could talk about.
I just want to say again that I loved the visuals in this movie. They were phenomenal.
Yeah, that opening scene. Oh, my God.
Yeah, and the sound design on this movie was pretty sweet as well. So this was just a solidly made film all around.
Yeah, indeed. I do feel there could have – if there is one issue, is that – the antagonist of the film, the real antagonist, not the people, may have been shown a little too early for my liking, because
but
not because it's bad, but because the main character's reaction to it wasn't as freak out as I would have thought, because I would have been freaking out if that was me. I may go, oh my God, this is not right. This is not how the world's supposed to be. What's going on here? And I would probably have a nervous breakdown. and so I felt that was a little too accepting by our lead character. But again, we'll talk about
it. She is a game warden.
If they weren't dedicated to studying nature to begin with, I would have been less believing of it.
Yeah.
But given her profession, I think it's a little more believable.
And it was dark when she first sees it. And she does, doesn't she? What happens?
Well, when the antagonist comes into the cabin, I still thought that was a little early and acceptable in her acceptance.
That's what you're talking about. Okay.
Yeah, I'm talking more of that because I mean,
we're talking about something else. We'll talk about it later.
Yeah. No, I think I know what you're talking about. But yeah. I mean, you don't know what's out in the woods, and who knows. But once you actually see it firsthand in the cabin, and the reaction after the fact isn't like, what the hell is this?
I think she's afraid at that point of the people she's with, even. So I don't know. I'm not sure. Yeah. I kind of agree with you, but then I'm kind of like, I don't know. She's totally in a almost alien environment, you know. It's just
sure. yeah, and that's why I would have had a nervous breakdown. I said, I'm done. I have to check out, go into tunnel vision.
She's made of sterner stuff.
I'm done. Keep that knife. I'm putting it in my mouth and falling over.
Yeah, exactly. Where's that arrow so I can fall on it too, you know? All right. It is what it is. All right. Anything else that we wanted to bring up?
I just want to detail that opening scene because it really is amazing. So it's done with a drone, and
done with a drone that's in the film. That's kind of the funny
thing. Yeah, exactly. And it's an upside down view, or it appears to be an upside down view of the river with the reflection of the river. So you see two of them, their canoe, reflected upside down. It's just it's amazing. It looks so cool. It's a great way to start.
Yeah.
It pulled me right in.
Yeah, you know what kind of reminded me of, Eric, was that film, Landmine Goes Click. Remember that one? That had that had a kind of cool opening too, with a drone, and they like stuttered it, so it made it look like a cartoon. But then when it fast forward and they stopped making the stutter, then you see the drone and it had the overlook. And again, that's in a national forest, but in Georgia instead of South Africa. But it was kind of reminding me of that. It is amazing what people can do now in small budget films, because after listening to numerous writer and director commentaries on these small budget films, how back in the day, everybody needed cranes and helicopters. Yeah. Well, now anybody can make a film with those type of shots if they're willing to rent or buy a drone. And that's just amazing. Absolutely amazing. But then again, as we saw with, was it Soderbergh that made that Unsain film off of an iPhone camera, you know, so you can even make a film that looks professional just from an iPhone camera. So it's just amazing what technology it can do, especially for low budget filmmakers or beginners. So,
well, and if anybody wants to, sorry, this is off topic, but I'm promoting my own stuff. I just posted a review of 1976 Carrie on my Eric's Movie Coder on YouTube. And during that review, I walk through a shot in that movie where they take a camera all the way through the prom and then transfer it to a train mid shot to go up over the shade, up over the stage. And it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I remember hearing that and the director's commentary for that film as well. Yep, absolutely. And nowadays, they don't even have to do that. It's just
right, you can just fly a drone.
Yep.
Now, drones are very useful. They are being used quite a bit. Like, it's gotten to the point where my buddy Dan, when we're watching a movie, and a lot of times drones are used in the opening shot. And if there's a drone shot for the opening shot, Dan just starts going off about what a pretentious pile of shit the movie is, even though we're in the opening credits.
did he do that for this film here?
I didn't watch this one with him.
Gotcha. Yeah, there was another film, me and Barrett, I think it was the first film we reviewed this year on Halloween Boutique Psychotronic Reviews, Go Don't Go. Yeah. And that guy did a lot of drone shots too. And sure enough, when we talked to him in the second episode we did on that film, he talked all about how all those drones and how he would never have been able to do it with the budget he had if they didn't exist.
Yep. Yeah, technology helps low budget filmmakers for sure.
And it gives the appearance of a higher budget, you know, because those drones can take such amazing shots now.
Mm-hmm.
Just technically, right, from that perspective.
Yeah. But I do like Dan's point, Eric, which is if you overkill it just because you have the drone, then it becomes a little amateurish as well. I mean, obviously I'm adding a little more to what Dan was implying, but I think.
Well, no, he's pretty stupidly extreme about it.
Sure. Dan being extreme about things like record players versus CDs.
Not other things. He never had an extreme opinion.
No, never. So anyway, all right. So anything else anybody wanted to bring up before we get into the spoiler section of this film? Anyone? All right. Sounds good. So at this point, we will throw up the spoiler alert. So what that means is that we will talk about everything and anything about the film, including the mystery, specific scenes that would spoil the film, and on and on. So once again, we critique and dissect, not just review. And with that, the spoiler alert is up. You have been warned, and I guess we can discuss everything and anything. So why don't we just explain what the whole story is about at the beginning.
Okay.
Basically, we have two park rangers, the boss and his assistant, or second in command. They are named Winston and Gabby, and they are going up the the Storms River, and they're basically going in to replace batteries and various other things on memory cards, all that stuff, for cameras they have out in the middle of the forest to basically track nature, you know, things of that nature and whatever. The typical government sponsored, I guess, testing and so forth. And, of course, they have a drone with them as well. And yeah, that's pretty much it. I will bring up their ethnicity just for the fact they bring it up themselves.
Because of the fact that you can't help yourself.
No, because they brought it up, and there had to be a reason they brought it up. And Winston, he's a black guy, a black South African, and Gabby appears to be like a Filipino or something of that nature, South African ethnicity. Because they even say that white people wouldn't do this, and or the black guy says that, and Gabby, you know, kind of just rolls her eyes. So
I think exactly what he said is, you're acting like white people. Danger, danger. Let's go towards it.
Right. And that's because
the drone, they lost contact with the drone, and the last thing it saw was a person.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. Now, I have to say, so Gabby wants to go get that drone because obviously it's expensive and yeah, that's not good to lose it. But her reasoning to go alone is pure stupidity, I feel, because if there's a person in the woods who was the person that knocks off your drone, and that person is in the woods, you know, we've seen enough of films where if there's a person in the woods, especially if you're a woman that's going out into the woods, that's not a smart thing to do.
No, I agree.
At least that's my feeling. So maybe Winston had a point, which is don't be stupid.
Well, and it's one of those things where you become familiar with an area, but you're not familiar with the whole area, but you feel comfortable because you've been in this part for so long. You don't really think about the danger involved with going off the normal trail.
But the thing that made it dangerous is there was an unknown person there in mud makeup.
Oh, yeah. She didn't seem worried about that at all.
Yeah. And that was – I was like, okay, that's this movie's going to suck. But fortunately, that error doesn't really ruin the film in the long run. But I was rolling my eyes at that point. Also, I felt it was weird that – Winston didn't go with her.
Yeah, that's where I have a problem with it.
Yeah.
Because even though he wanted to get all those cameras and memory cards and batteries all fixed, it's like he's the boss. So you just do it the next day if you can't get to it in time, especially if there's $1,000 or $1,500 piece of equipment that just got knocked down and you're letting a woman walk in the woods alone where she saw some strange guy that looked like a primitive. So yeah, he should have gone with her. So that was silly.
Yep.
Again, though, Barrett does have a fair point, which is, you know, they're familiar with this area, so they don't really feel dangerous. I mean, it's like when I go to the forest for my lunch walk with my dog, I know the forest pretty well, especially if I stay on path. And even if I do lose path, I know if I just head a certain way, I'm going to hit a road or a house sooner or later. But if I knew there was a bear out there or there was some weirdo that was dressed like a primitive, you know damn well I'm not going out there.
Yeah. Well, and it's not like the drone stopped in front of the guy and it went staticky right in front of him. So he had to have something to do with it. So.
Right. Right, exactly, and she knew that. So that was my only issue with the opening. Anything else that we wanted to bring about the opening and how the movie really starts off? Because the movie really does start off pretty much right at the beginning.
Yeah, right at the beginning. Yeah, it's pretty fast.
Eric, what about yourself? Anything you wanted to add to any of that?
Nope.
All right, sounds good. All right, so where do we want to go from now? Again, we don't have to go scene by scene or anything like that. We can just go wherever we want, talk in generals, and then focus on a specific of those generals.
Well, I mean, we can continue a little bit because this is really just the setup to what the rest of the movie is, which is that she goes trotting off to go find a drone. He goes trotting off to go collect memory cards and such. And she gets hit by a trap that the survivalists have set. And apparently it's a damn good trap because it drives a spike all the way through her foot. Ouch.
I could feel that. Just the look of it was like, ah.
So she gets the spike out of her foot and limps her way to she finds a kind of a cabin in the woods and goes in there and sets down to try and like look at her foot. And then the two survivalists come in because that's their home. And they're like, what the hell are you doing here? And she's like, I hurt my foot. And the one guy says, you broke our trap, which I thought was pretty funny. But then they help start tend to her wounds and her foot and everything. And she's just kind of hanging out with them while she recovers from her injury. And meanwhile, her boss gets lost in the dark in the woods trying to find her because he hears her scream when she pulls a spike out of her foot and is off looking for her. And he runs into something that is not good for him.
Yeah, there's a couple of things that happen in that whole period. And I like to bring up during that they actually do show the perspective of the survivalists too, which I thought was interesting because by showing them, even though they looked as if they could be a malevolent or antagonist for the film, by bringing them in and just showing them doing this trap set up and picking mushrooms. And then, you know, you see this weird thing about how the mushroom spores just float across their air stream and whatnot. And I thought that was interesting because it made me wonder, are they setting the trap? Because they actually show them setting up the trap. And are they setting it up because of her and Winston, or are they setting it up for food? And eventually we find out
for food.
Yeah. I mean, eventually we do find that out because of what you just said, where they say you ruined our trap. But I wasn't quite sure because, again, they took the drone, right? They stole the drone and then they put it on their back to carry it and stuff. So I was like, what's going on here? But all in all, I felt that was kind of good how they did it because it did bring us to the perspective of these two people in the middle of the woods without them just appearing at the cabin beforehand. And I don't know what you guys felt, if that was a good move or not.
I mean, it gave everything a reason or at least an instance. I don't know what I'm trying to say here. It started with the drone. And the dude that took out the drone, we find out later, is very anti-technology in general. So it makes sense that he would want to take it out of commission.
Yep.
So as far as her, like, stumbling upon their cabin, I mean, there was some – she had a – and here's the thing. There's so much visual flair in this movie and so many things that are kind of trippy. That it gets hard to keep track of what actually is real and what's not, which I kind of enjoyed on one hand. On the other hand, there's that moment where she sees the red glow around the cabin and it leads her to it. And I don't understand if that was real, if that was a result of her inhaling those spores they showed in the wind.
That's what I thought. Yeah, I thought it was the spores leading her to the cabin.
There's So like earlier, Phil used the word supernatural, and I disagreed with that. It can certainly seem supernatural, but everything that's portrayed in this film, I understand to be biological.
That's how I felt, too. I felt it was biological. Like, even the spores leading her to the cabin, it was like an intelligence was behind the spores that did that.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, it is curious. We did another film, I think it was last year. Yeah, it was last year, Little Joe, which kind of showed a plant with spores.
I remember that.
Yeah. And not that fungi are plants, you know, so no hate mail for any person that is a biologist.
Mike, email us.
Yeah, right. But generally, you know, you get the idea that, you know, these non-animal creatures can do things even if they're not sentient. So here, they may be sentient. I mean, Super Deep, is another film like Little Joe. But
well, thanks for bringing up Super Deep, Phil, because it was nagging in my brain. Like, I was like, we talked about a movie that was something like this earlier in the year, but I couldn't connect it. I was like, what the fuck was that movie?
Yeah, Phil and I were talking about that earlier, and I was like, well, they are very similar, but Super Deep felt more fantastical, whereas this felt a little more down to earth. The fungus seemed more earthly to me, if that makes sense. So I could relate to it more, creeped out more.
Right. Yeah, because, I mean, obviously in Super Deep, well, I don't know, because they're using, in Super Deep, they were using, what type of fungus? It begins with a C. From what was that?
I don't remember, but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. What was that video game, the zombie video? Oh, One of Us? Was it One of Us that was about?
The Last of Us?
The Last of Us, yeah. The Last of Us had that type of fungi in it that caused all the problems to the earth, and that was cordyceps. That's it. Yeah. Cordyceps. So
okay.
Yeah. So that was cordyceps. Here, to be honest, it kind of was like a cordyceps because it takes over the mind, right? I mean,
here's the trivia I wanted to bring up. Now, what I'm about to read about is not cordyceps. But you said something earlier about how you found this to be unrealistic. That there's this organism that's like basically under the entire forest. Check this out. This one I knew about for a long time because I
know what you're going to talk about. Yeah.
Yeah. There is a humongous fungus. I'm reading from an article now I found on livescience.com. There's a humongous fungus lurking underground in Michigan. It's exceptionally old, tremendously heavy, and has a curiously low mutation rate. Here are the fungus's impressive stats. It's at least 2,500 years old, although it's likely much older, weighs nearly 882,000 pounds, and spans 75 hectares. Sorry, I have trouble with that word. 0.75 square kilometers, or 140 American football fields. And I think the reason it's been able to survive so long is because it's low mutation rate. So that's a massive fungus right here in the state that I live in. This other one I have is even bigger. It's out in Oregon. And let's see here. They also call it the humongous fungus because apparently people are very original. Estimated to weigh at least 7,500 tons. And maybe up to 35,000 tons. It's likely the world's oldest organism as well, estimated to be around 2,400 years, 2,400 to 8,650 years old. And it covers 3.5 square miles.
Well, and that brings up another item. So there's a fungus that works with tree roots to communicate. All the trees communicate together.
Mm-hmm.
That's a thing too. They call them, let's see what I found here, mycorrhizal networks. And they form this huge symbiotic relationship. So the whole forest area is in communication with itself.
Mm-hmm.
So all that kind of works with this plot.
Yeah. So I thought that was kind of interesting, and ties into this movie here, in that, these survivalists, at least the father, pretty much worships this humongous fungus as a deity. And although what happens in this movie is very strange and a bit outlandish, there are indeed massive funguses on the planet.
Yep.
Yeah, and that's a fair point. Yeah, and the interesting thing about these survivalists, if we talk about them, basically it's Barand, who's the father, and Stefan is the son. And the thing is that Barand, as we learn about him later in the film, is what we call a scientist or a highly educated PhD or something. Mm-hmm. And so he is wise to the world, and yet he's become, like you said, he's now worshiping a fungi that may not even be sentient. It just may be, as you said, Barrett, almost like a network, and it's just doing things to survive, you know, right. like, Cordyceps do things to survive, even though they're not necessarily intelligent. The creature in Little Joe was doing things to survive because, you know, even though it wasn't intelligent. So it's just interesting that he would fall for it being a deity rather than just thinking that, you know, this is the way the world ends rather than a deity. And I thought that was curious.
But here's the thing. His psychosis.
All right. At some point in the movie, he communicates with this thing or thinks he's communicating with this thing. I don't know whether he did or not. It's impossible to know for sure whether he did or not. He certainly thinks he did. And thinks that this deity has a plan to leave the forest and spread. Right? And eventually it does.
Yeah.
So the real question is whether this was done as an intentional plan or whether it was an accident.
You mean by Bernard Farad? Oh.
Because at the end of the movie, it's implied that that's exactly what is happening.
Yeah. Oh, I agree. I think it was intentional, but I don't know if it was intentional because it's sentient. I think it could be intentional because, like all life,
it just tries to spread.
It wants to spread. You know, like dandelions. You know, I mean, it just adapts.
I get what you're saying, but like to me, this this almost feels like a good version of The Happening.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
Right. Right. Yeah, maybe. One of the best examples of nature adapting that's a plant or non-sentient is peppers, hot peppers, right? So okay. Hot peppers grow, and what happens is
mammals, they're hot, so animals won't want to eat them.
Right, exactly. So deer and whatnot won't eat them. Another plant like that is poke. Poke is a plant, and they have these little berries that are poisonous to mammals and stuff. But what happens, the reason that is, and like there's ghost peppers or whatever, or scorpion peppers, is because the plant is adapted so animals like deer won't eat them, same with poke.
Mm-hmm.
And what eats them instead are birds, because birds aren't the hotness of the pepper or the poison from the poke plant do not harm birds. So the birds eat the peppers and the poke berries, and then they fly off
seeds.
And they poop out the seeds. Exactly.
It spreads them further.
Exactly. So I'm curious if that's what actually happened here and it wasn't The Happening.
I think it's kind of symbiotic between him and the plant. So like he's got this plan to for this to go out. And the plant utilizes him as its carrier. The plant, I don't know that it necessarily happened exactly the way he expected,
mm-hmm.
but it still happened. But I think the plant's ascension as well. I think it's got some intelligence as it absorbs probably organisms with higher intelligence. It gains something from that.
Well, it also seems to hunger for blood, right?
Yeah.
Because at the one point he pours some blood into the tree where it is. By the way, that opening in the tree, very, very vaginal.
Yes.
But he pours some blood in there, and immediately we see fungus growth, growing fast enough that you can see it growing.
Here's the question. That fungus is able to heal whatever gets into them. So why is the fungus itself producing the fungus to heal them?
Well,
I think it's part of that symbiotic relationship.
That's a good question. Yeah. So maybe you're right, because in other instances we see like the fucking fungus men. Holy shit. Great creature design on those things.
Yeah.
And they're going after humans because I don't know if it's a different kind of fungus, but apparently that kind of fungus just like eats away your eyes and your tongue and your lungs and eventually just takes over your body as a fungus instead of a mammal, which is really kind of terrifying to think about.
Really creepy. That's why I found this film very creepy.
Yeah. And her boss runs into one of these things and gets infected. And there's a point in the movie where Baron goes to take her out, to take her back to civilization, and she stops because she finds her boss's radio and goes looking for her and finds him in the midst of transformation. And she wants to try and take him to the hospital, try and save him. And when Baron goes to kill him with a bow and arrow, she stops him. And so he just takes the arrow and puts the head of the arrow in the guy's mouth and leaves the decision up to him. And the guy just puts his weight under the arrow so it punctures the back of his head and kills him because that's what he wanted.
Yeah, he actually asks her to kill him, and she doesn't. She can't do it.
Right. Yeah, and that's why the movie The Super Deep really affected me too, because like when they found that girl or young woman in the one of the rooms down in the whatever the elevator shaft way at the bottom, she had all that shit on her back, and mm-hmm. you know she's done. You know, I mean, there's nothing you can do. You know, it's. I mean, that's why, you know, there was all those horrifying films back in the 80s about stuff like that because of the AIDS. You know, I mean, people, you know, without the medicine and the technology we have today, the life expectancy was low, you know, and people were scared and whatever. And so it's frightening. You know, I mean, same with cancer. I mean, when you get cancer and you know, your life, they tell you, they actually say you have 2.5 years to live when you get lung cancer and there's no cure. And it's like, holy fuck, what do you do? You know? Mm-hmm. So
you die. That's
right. And that's terrifying. So, you know, this film here, showing the quick, takeover of Winston, of this fungi, and how he's suffering because I can't believe he's feeling okay. I mean, he's suffering and yet he's still alive because it's like a living parasite. I mean, he's a living host for a parasite, basically.
Mm-hmm.
That's a terrible thing.
It's a slow way to die.
Yeah. No, but I can't answer your question, Barrett. That's an excellent question. I don't know why eating the fungus keeps them safe.
Well, I mean, there could easily be a biological reason behind that. Like, there's often things like that in nature. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I just wondered about it because it was interesting that he had to use blood of the creature to get something that would protect them from it.
And yet, based off of what happens at the end of the film, even though they're protected from it and aren't going to turn into those mushroom people, the problem is it's like 28 weeks later where there can be carriers of the virus.
Yep.
Well, and Baron even says that earlier in the movie. She goes, how come you two aren't infected? And he just says, we are.
He gives a little smile, though.
Yeah.
I like that.
So maybe ingesting the fungus allows him to communicate with it. And that's why he knows the plan. I don't know. I'm reaching here.
But I got to say that being the nihilist that he is, he's not determined to just go in, because right now he could just pack up and head downtown to, you know, Cape Town or Peoria and sayonara to the earth, but he doesn't do it. Right. So he is the he doesn't want to be the apocalypse, is what I'm saying.
I just put something together. When he's theoretically communicating with the fungus, right? He has this realization that it wants his son to be the sacrifice. Right. Maybe he misinterpreted what it meant by sacrifice. Maybe he thought that he wanted to bring his son here and kill him, when in actuality, he wanted him to send him off into civilization to spread everything.
Right. Because death doesn't necessarily mean literal death. It also could be the end of a relationship, meaning the son, send the son off, you know, break the bond and have the son go, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing that's interesting, because he has the opportunity to do that when Gabby is willing to take the son, but he stops her because he's still convinced that the plan was to basically do, you know, the biblical sacrifice or the Aztec sacrifice to the gods, basically. You know.
Although I just kind of thought of something that blows my own theory out of the water, which is that when she shows up to try and stop him, the plants grab her. So maybe that is what they were going for.
Right. That could be true too. Yeah.
And at this point, we talked about, I am pretty convinced that there's sentience involved.
Well, let me ask you this.
Where the plants grab her, that's definitely intentional.
Yeah, that's fair. Now, let me ask you this. When they take her in and they bring her back to health, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think he was going to let her go?
Yes, at a certain point.
But
like when they're on their way out of the forest and they stop to find her boss, if they had not stopped to find her boss, I think he would have taken her back and let her go.
I agree. Yeah, he didn't want her there anymore because he saw her as bad influence on his son.
But that's not that. No, but that's not my point. My point is by letting her go, does he know that she's going to be spreading the apocalypse?
I don't know if she would have been or not. I can't quite remember the sequence of events well enough. At one point, the son does give her a piece of the fungus to protect her.
But I can't also, if
that happened before that or not.
Also, you know what? I think she got infected when the mushroom people invaded the house, you remember?
And because she was picking the fungus out of her leg.
Right.
Yeah.
So maybe that's when... Yeah, so when they were going to let her go earlier, she hadn't been infected yet, is my guess.
Well, I don't know, because she went through that huge cloud of spores, and she wasn't, like, trying not to breathe them in or anything, and it was a ginormous cloud of spores.
And she was having all those trippy dreams, too, which I'm assuming were caused by the spores she'd inhaled.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, that's true. She kept on having those dreams, and that was before the intentional dreams that she gets later when they let her, quote-unquote.
Whatever.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, you're right. She was already having those fishy dreams, and usually those fishy dreams, you know, in a weaker movie, or as, let me rephrase, as what Mike would call a weaker movie, because he doesn't like those type of dream sequences in films.
He doesn't like here, it's not a zombie movie or a comic movie.
That is true. That is absolutely true. But in this movie here, those dream sequences most certainly could be looked at as legit and not just to move the plot or to add scares, simply for the fact that the dream are caused by the fungi itself, the spores. That's what I'm thinking. What about you, yeah. Barrett? What do you think?
Well, I definitely think it's mind-altering dreams from the spores that when he blows that powder into her face. Is that the dream sequence you're talking about?
Well,
her general dreams.
Well, yeah. At the beginning, there was a few dreams. I mean, of course, you could say maybe it was a fever dreams because, you know, she just got stabbed and she's recovering. But there were dreams, weird dreams she's had early in the film.
Oh, right. No, I think those were still.
That was after she had gone through the spores, I thought.
Yeah, I still think those are spore generated. And the stuff he blows into her is even more concentrated. So that's why that's so extreme, that whole session where she dreams. But yeah, I think all of her dreams are coming from those spores.
Yeah.
She's starting to have mushroom thoughts.
Right. So she could already be infected even at that point, possibly.
Yeah, and she might be. And it might be different from those spores than it is from, like, getting hurt by them. Like, the cut he got from the one was, like, instantly almost covered in spores. Or covered in mushrooms.
Right, right. Yeah.
So it might be faster that way because it went directly into his bloodstream, or I don't know.
Right, right. Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. It is interesting. So, yeah, I'm curious if anybody who breathes the spores, you're infected. And if you leave, you cause the end of the world.
Yes, if you can get far enough before you turn into something like the Winston did.
Yeah.
Because remember, you have to get out of the forest, so you kind of need their little thing that immunizes you for a little while to be able to get out.
Right, right. Yep. Yeah.
Well, and the sun had been in there for so I don't think he was showing signs of, like, deteriorating once he got out. So maybe he just had, like, a built-up immunity at that point.
Possible.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, yeah. Or that could be a flaw in the script. Or
don't
he just
forget,
had a bunch.
We don't know what the mom was doing. She was a chemist, and she had, you know, the cancer. She could have been doing experiments out there. We don't know. We just don't know what happened before they got into that shack.
Yeah, right. I thought it was really cool that she's a tree now, though.
Yeah.
What about the mother being a mad scientist and she created the fungi?
I thought about that. I mean, any of that's possible, right?
To me, the fungus is so big that it has to be old.
But she might have been experimenting with it to try and cure her cancer, maybe.
Oh, maybe.
Yeah, and then you know fucked it up like wait, let's create these bees that will eat mosquitoes, and then we'll be fine. And then suddenly that you let the bees out, they kill all the mosquitoes, but then you get these bees left.
That reminds me of an article I read, because they're creating mosquitoes in Florida that aren't supposed to be able to, you know, reproduce or whatever. And they said in the article that they had thought of every possibility. I'm like, that is not possible. You could not have possibly thought of every combination that could happen from this.
Right. Right.
But that's the arrogance of science, right?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
the arrogance of humanity in general.
Yes, humanity with science, I should say.
Yeah, we got plenty of those, whether it's nuclear bombs to COVID, that could be, you know, man's. Yeah, yeah. And so who knows? Maybe it was this ancient fungi and she was trying to convert it to heal her cancer. And then she.
I never even considered that. That's a cool theory.
Yeah, and that's why she's the tree person.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the goddess, you know, I mean, yeah, I mean, it's just crazy. I mean, it's only implied, but there's enough there that implication is a legitimate theory.
Well, and it's interesting because he worships her and it, and that process would, you know, if it had been gradual, like her change, could explain his personality a little more, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And who knows? Sure. Maybe he had enough spores that it was changing his mind structure as well, and that's why he became so fanatical.
Or maybe the fungus wasn't sentient until his wife integrated with it, and his wife is the sentience.
Yeah, exactly. I thought about that too. Yeah, there are a lot of possibilities, and they're all cool.
And that's the reason why a person of his intellect and education level, along with the loss of your wife and behavioral health issues that were probably there in the first place, could fall into worshiping this wife/fungi because of, you know, that combination.
I was just going to say, I'm still not convinced he had mental health issues. He could be right about the whole fucking thing.
Well, so let me rephrase when I say mental. I mean, you're right. I mean, the determination what is mental health issues can be debatable, but I'm just thinking because he decided to literally just disappear from life and not allow his son to live a normal life, and I don't know. It's just,
and he wants to destroy the world.
Yeah, I see what you're saying, though, Eric. Because why do I or any of us have the right to say that he has mental health issues?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's you know.
He definitely believes in something that you don't, and that you don't believe is possible. But
when I say mental health issues, when I say mental health issues, I would say like a majority of society would think he's crazy because he wants to destroy society.
I'll agree with that.
Yeah, that does not necessarily make him crazy. It just makes him, you know, whatever's not societal.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the thing.
Absolutely.
There's no doubt he has dissocial personality disorder. That's absolutely true. So he has that mental illness, which is basically sociopathy. But
yeah, I have issues with some things they labeled as mental health issues.
Well, they suck.
Yeah, not wanting to be
isn't your that people, really the healthy thing to stay away from them.
What is that?
People suck. So is it the healthy thing to stay away from them? How is that a mental health?
Yes.
Well, agreed. Because this kind of reminds me of Ted Kaczynski.
What?
The Unabomber.
No, he stayed away from people but got near them by blowing them up.
This guy's making bombs. He's talking about fungus.
Yeah. All right.
But in the end, a little more extreme.
Right, and he's also believing that it's okay to take an axe to his son to send to a fungus. I mean, this is some
that's a minor detail. All right.
Okay, I lost this argument.
Yes, you did. At that point, the axe to the son, that kind of fungus.
I was doing good until he brought up the axe. I'm like, oh crap.
But everything else, he's not killing anybody. He's just turning them into fungus, and they're still alive, right?
Well,
they're just going to serve a better purpose.
Well, I don't know about that either.
Those people might not agree, but that's how he sees it. The world would be a better place if everyone was this fungus instead.
Yep.
Yeah, I guess. And technically,
it's kind of like Moses when he's going to kill his son, too, you know? Like,
yeah, that's the biblical one I was thinking of. Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's a good question. I mean, you know, the debate is if there was not intellect, like human intellect in this world, obviously the world, in theory, for the rest of the world could be better, but that ain't the world. That ain't the world. The world includes one animal on the planet that has an intellect that allows them to actually change and control things. And that's what the world really is. So
control is an illusion.
Well,
sorry, I'm taking my Jurassic Park line.
That's the thing, right? The Earth, back in those days, the Jurassic days, didn't have that one animal that had the intelligence that the humans do in this generation of the world. So
until the aliens came and left the obelisk.
That's right. 2001. Well done. So I don't know. I mean, technically, was the world better during the Jurassic days without the human intellect? And again, I'm not saying humans in general, because humans just...
I am.
Well, I'm saying I agree, because humans are the ones that have the intellect, but the humans just randomly got it. So I don't want to just blame them. Us, in other words, because we just...
I do. We're shit.
I agree completely with Eric here.
We're blamed for everything.
I've tried to be politically correct, but...
Fuck that! We suck!
Was the Jurassic time period a better time period for Earth?
Yes.
I just say a different one, but yeah, it was better for the Earth itself. Humans are a plague that are destroying the planet.
Okay, then it was better then, because obviously if humans were then we would be, you would be saying, oh yeah, that sucked too, because the humans were there destroying the planet. But
we'd be ruining everything we got a hold of.
Right. So yeah, that's...
I thought you were on board. People suck.
Yeah, I mean, we're yeah. I guess you're talking to the two nihilists here.
Yeah, but I don't know. Yeah, so why? Yeah, so this is what that guy is doing. But again, though, I don't know if he's really thinks all this, or if he's just thinking this way because his wife became got cancer and became a mushroom person.
Well, and that's the problem. We don't get that background, so we that's one of the... it's good and bad. Good because it gets us talking, because we don't know. But bad because we don't have that background, so it's hard to say for sure.
Right. Yeah, because we don't know if he was a huge pro science, you know, whatever, or if he was always a crunchy from the beginning, or did he just become what he is now because his wife got cancer? So if his wife never got cancer,
well, and I don't want to solely link it to his wife getting cancer, but his wife getting cancer inspired her to want to come back to the woods. Yeah. And I think being in the woods is probably what inspired him. So they're linked, but I don't think it's direct cause and effect, if that makes any sense.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, and what was his degree again? I can remember hers was chemistry, but I don't remember what his was.
It wasn't the same as hers, but it was something that was like highly educated.
Yeah.
And when I say that, I'm not talking about, you know, PhD in medieval history. I'm talking about it was a science or some sort of that type of degree, but it wasn't chemistry.
Right. It wasn't chemistry. It was definitely different from chemistry.
Yeah. But it was some science type thing, whether it was...
Yeah.
I think it was
like paleontology or something like that. I thought it was paleontology.
I thought he was chemist or something.
I thought he was an engineer.
Clearly, we were paying close attention. Yeah. We all have a different answer.
Well,
So I'm looking at Wikipedia. It says he was a plant pathologist.
Okay.
All right. So that's what he was. All right. So it could have been
his accent too that was slurring it off for me at times.
Well, and then
I was having a hard time understanding him.
Right, and then he was speaking Afrikaans, and you had to read quick, or you had to rewind a few times. I had to rewind a few times because the subtitles were too quick.
Yeah.
I can read fast. People were
mad
at me about it.
That's why I'm reading fast. especially subtitles, because sometimes it's a pain in the ass. Where do we want to go next? What do we want to talk about next? Let's talk about there was obviously, I mean, you brought up the vagina thing, Eric, but there was definitely a sexual thing going on about Gabby, because, you know, they had her have that weird, like,
Well, and I'm still trying to determine if it actually happened. Now, did she actually hook up with the son?
You know, I don't know, but she did that Kirsten Dunst in the woods scene.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. What the hell is that movie called again?
Melancholia.
Melancholia. Yeah, yeah. So she had one of those moments. You know, so there, you know, the female form, the beauty, and all that stuff.
Well,
and
then also nature. Tripping balls when that happened.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's true. That's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
So something was going on. I'm not quite sure what any of that meant.
Yeah, and that's really the only thing I can fault this movie with is that the line between dreams / hallucinations and reality was such that it was never absolutely defined, and I couldn't really trust what I was seeing.
Right. I mean, obviously, this would have been a film, but again, some as I've noted, some films that Chrissy, who joins us sometimes, she rips too, even if they're art house with symbolism. But whether she would rip this film or not, I think she would have paid attention to them to the point where she would maybe even overanalyze them in a sense.
Mm.
And so there's got to be something there. It's just that I wasn't really 100% sure.
Nor am I, but I enjoyed it anyway.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. It was just, Gabby doing the Kirsten Dunst. What wasn't bad, that's for sure. I'm
gonna focus on that.
Well, you know how it is. And
the first time they showed boobs in it, I was like, "Oh, Phil's gonna give this a thumbs up."
Phil's gonna give this 3 thumbs up.
Yeah, it was definitely unexpected, that's for sure.
It was. I didn't expect it at all in this movie.
Yeah, yeah. And then it really went there. Yeah.
Well, the first time it happened, it was not sexual in nature.
No. It's when she got the blood on her and they had to rip her clothes off to get the blood off of her.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Of course, it was seemed harsh to her because she didn't know what they were doing and why.
Well, and that's why she said, "Hey!"
Right, right, right. But she kind of knew it wasn't sexual either, so that's why she
went along with it.
Yeah, didn't protest that much. And obviously, yeah, she wanted to get that gook off her.
Yeah.
Mushroom blood. Yeah, that's not good.
Mushroom blood. That's kind of fucked up that it had blood.
Yeah, well, because it's
but it was originally a human, so.
Yeah. Right, yeah, so it still had that blood, yeah.
Yeah, the whole symbiotic relationship there was really creepy.
Right, right. And it was also, he said that it went for Homo sapiens over any other creature, too.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was interesting. Maybe because it knew humans had the intelligence, you know.
Like or that it was the best way to spread itself.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, because humans dominate... the dominant animal on the planet, right? There's more humans than any other, so makes sense.
Well, and he does say that this organism was there long before apes.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. That's right. Just like the one under Michigan and Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Better watch out, Eric. It's near you.
Not that near me. I'm safe for now.
Yeah.
Michigan is bigger than people think. I live near Ann Arbor, and look at a map and pay attention to the scale. It's hundreds of miles away from you, so I'm safe for now.
Its drones are going to get out and get to you.
Well, the Communist Chinese Party will take us all out before any of that, so don't worry.
You shouldn't worry about that, Phil. Your reality is only the 30 yards around you.
You're absolutely right. I've been good for even though the past 40 days have been horrible. I've only been focusing the 30 yards around me, and I've stopped following everything else because it's just all crap.
That I had to agree with.
Yeah.
Woo.
Yeah.
You're just a step away from the nihilism, man.
I'm pretty much.
My hope is that our robot overloads take over before the fungus can get me.
Yeah.
Well, make it after I die of old age or something. I don't know.
No, I'm taking you with me, man.
Damn it.
For good measure.
See, because I'm going to be friends with the robots, and I'll say, go get Phil first. I'm on your side.
Oh, you're going to be one of those human slaves that work for the
Yes, I am. Overlords. I welcome our robot overlords.
Oh, jeez. So, what else do we want to talk about? Is there any other scenes we missed or specifics to the movie that were interesting before we eventually get into the end, obviously? There's going to be something anybody wanted to bring up.
I mean, a lot of this movie is visual, so it's hard to talk about. There's not a whole lot of plot going on here, right?
Let's talk about Gabby. I was shocked that she succumbed too. I wasn't expecting that. She got the same thing that happened to Winston happened to her.
They weren't
the same thing though. Because he would have been turned into one of the fungus creatures, and that's not what happened to her.
That is not what happened to her. You're right. But
we also don't know for sure. As she was begging Stefan to kill her, we don't know if he actually did or not. Either he killed her and that's why she didn't turn into one of those fungus creatures,
or what happened to her was different
and she just got eaten by vegetation.
Yeah.
She could have just dissolved away, or she could have became like the mum.
They weren't able to get anything that would fix you anymore because they didn't. I guess I don't know that the son knew how the father was doing that, and even if he did, they didn't have any blood at that point, right?
Mm-hmm.
To pour in there.
Yeah, and I honestly, I don't think the son knew. I think the son was clueless.
Yeah, I thought so too.
Yeah, and so. Yeah, so at that point, but I think there's also a point where there's no going back to, and at points when she was being eaten by the fungus, Gabby was eaten by the fungus. There was a point where even if they got the mushroom, I don't think it would have done anything.
No, because, I think you're right about that.
But yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Let's see. Anything you wanted to bring up, Barrett? Anything else that we missed?
No, I think, like Eric said, it's a lot of visual stuff, so it's hard to. You have to watch it, really.
All right. Well, let's talk about this ending then, because it is a trick ending, right? Because it goes black, so you think I was about to shut off the film, and then suddenly
I was too.
We're in the city.
Yeah, title screen, and then it comes back.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what's funny is let's go around. Did you predict what was going to happen? I predicted it.
Yeah, I did.
In that he was going to go back to the city?
No, that he was a carrier and he was going to be the apocalypse.
No, but it made sense when I saw it.
Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah, because
I was predicted, but when it happened, I wasn't like, what? I was like, oh.
Right. Yeah, that's a fair point. Yeah, because, I mean, I didn't really predict it. What I was thinking was, I wonder if they're going to go where he's not now liberated, but thinks he's liberated, but he's actually the plague carrier. And so when they did show it, I was like, oh, I was right. But again, I could have seen them not have done that either.
Well, I'm also wondering if he knows. Because if you were paying attention, right, the very first shot we get of him in the city, he makes a point of covering his mouth and his nose.
Right. But that could have been just man is bad because of the pollution. But you're right. It could have been him actually.
Yeah, and we don't know for sure again.
Right.
So I actually found the ambiguity of this movie really intriguing.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, and that's what makes it more interesting, too, during these 2 years with COVID, right? Because it's kind of he's the carrier. He's the COVID carrier. You know, he's patient zero.
Get these people on the show, Phil. I want to talk to them.
Yeah. I mean, the film's small enough. There's a chance that.
I would love to talk to them.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind talking to the director or the screenwriter. And I would even ask him, hey, could you say it in Afrikaans? I'd like to hear it.
Afrikaans is a pretty cool sounding language, I gotta say.
It really is, yeah.
Yeah, it is. It is. Yeah. So yeah, so the ending is nihilistic in a sense.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So
in some cases I don't like nihilism, but it works in this movie for sure.
Well, right, because nihilism is actually part of the idea of the film. It's not just being nihilistic to be nihilistic.
Exactly. You know? Like killing every character off the movie.
Like Candyman felt like it was that was my problem, where I said everybody's just out for vengeance nowadays in films. You know, and I always feel that's bad unless it's actually the intention of the film was to be nihilistic.
I like versus the vengeance movie. I saw that.
Well, I do. I do too. That's fair. That's fair. But I saw The Devil had a message saying that vengeance is bad, right?
Well, Candyman kind of
didn't. Yeah. And this one here has nothing to do with vengeance. It just has to do with nihilism in general and what could happen, you know, similar to like John Carpenter's The Thing or mm-hmm. you know, Zack Snyder's Dawn of the Dead or whatever. And so I think it fit perfectly as an ending, or even Annihilation. You remember that one? That was an interesting one too. So I think it was really good, the ending. I liked it. I don't think it wasn't even a cheat either. It was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was really cool.
Yeah. I would have loved to see the story of him walking out of the forest and being, you know, because how did he get the clothes? How did he integrate? You know, because again, he doesn't know anything, right? Or he's not supposed to know anything. So
it's hard to tell because he doesn't say a whole lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. You never know. The father could have told him all that stuff.
Yeah. And he does speak English, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and
so I mean, it's not just so he speaks two languages, and you know, if he could be understood, then somebody would probably help him.
Right, right, and both of them, and both of those languages are hugely spoken in South Africa. So he's fine. Actually, if you know both languages,
imagine that he didn't read his father's journal or whatever that was.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, that's a really good point. Yeah. I would like to know what more in the journal too. That would have been interesting.
Right. Right. Yeah, I was interested in seeing a prequel to this movie, particularly if that wacky theory I threw out is true, in that his mother ended up giving the sentience to the fungus. I would like to see that.
Now, Eric, do you buy this film or did you rent it?
I bought it.
And did it didn't come with any extras?
No, sadly.
Yeah, that's too bad. Yeah, this would be a great for a writer and director commentary for that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So maybe we'll throw out I'll try to tag those folks out on social media, assuming they are on social media.
Right. So, yeah. No. I would. I would love to know the intent.
Indeed, indeed. Yeah. So this is a good example of an episode where there's only three of us, and we had a lot to talk about versus, say, the Christopher Smith film from earlier this year that we haven't released yet. That episode where it was like, "What do we say?"
Is that out yet?
Yeah, I haven't released that one yet. Yeah.
Which movie was that?
Actually coming out. It was me, you, and Eric. We did it. The one about the English people that went into because of a B, The Banishing, maybe something like that.
No, it wasn't The Banishing. That's the Neil Marshall one.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So
also disappointing. Not as disappointing as this one we're talking about that I can't remember the title of either.
Yeah, I'll find it right now. Because of a B. I'm pretty sure. All right, here it is. I got Christopher Smith up. The episode's coming out, folks, so be aware. It's called The Banishing. Yeah, I was right.
It is The Banishing. Well, then what the hell's the one I'm thinking of?
Yeah, Neil Marshall's. That one was supposed to be terrible, too. I'll look that one up right now. I got something called a computer and the internet in front of me. And I typed in IMDb. And it is called The Reckoning.
The Reckoning. Okay, so they're both lame titles.
Yeah, lame titles and lame films, which is too bad because they're both pretty good directors. Anyway, this is not The Reckoning or The Vanishing. This is Gaia, which is a really Indeed. Good film. Even though this title is unfortunate as well, because I think that's why I ignored it when I first saw it like 3 months ago.
It's really fitting, though, for the movie. It's really fitting for the movie, though, so it's kind of a hard one.
Yeah. Yeah, I would concur. Yeah, but unfortunately, I don't think it's a good marketing name.
Probably right. not. And they did have some production issues. Like I said, it was shut down because of COVID for a while.
Right.
So it's actually kind of a miracle it got finished to begin with.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, and I'm not sure how COVID is down in South Africa and the laws are down there. I just have no idea. But they were able to get it done finally, so that's good.
My perception is that it's worse in the rest of the world than it is here.
Yeah. I know they were trying to say it was here was horrible at one point, which it is. But again, our population is 330 million versus a smaller country. So percentage wise, we're actually pretty much where everybody else is. So death wise, and then law wise, yeah, some of the laws.
I have no idea what South African laws are in relation to COVID.
Right. Because we know Australia is like draconian, but again, I.
Also, it was New Zealand, and they eradicated it. So,
yeah, that's true. They are remote, which helps. That's no doubt. But yeah, that's a fair point. All right, so let's see. Any further things anybody wanted to talk about? Gaia. I think that's how you pronounce it.
I'll just reiterate once again: visually amazing. Even though the movie is really interesting and what we've been talking about throughout this whole thing, it still doesn't, we can't, I don't think it's possible for us to communicate how beautiful some of the trippy dream sequences are in this movie.
Yep. I would concur. Yeah, those dream sequences were really awesome. No doubt.
Especially
about
the one where they were standing in front of that tree. Woo, that was beautiful.
Yeah, that was awesome. And also the Kirsten Dunst scene. That was pretty damn good.
That was Phil. That's just
it was awesome. Well, yeah, Phil, that's true.
He's the only man in the existence that doesn't know how to find porn on the internet.
Oh, for Christ's sake. Anyway. All right. So what about you, Barrett? Any further things you wanted to bring up about Gaia that you had on your list that you didn't get to bring up?
No, I think we brought pretty much everything up.
All right. That sounds good. All right. So before we get into our final thoughts on the film and some house cleaning, I guess we can get into news and what we've been watching. If there is anything in the past week anybody wanted to bring up, why don't you go first, Eric?
Let's see. What have I been watching? When's the last time I recorded? Okay. Nothing really related to this podcast, except for I watched The Werewolves Within. Given that it has werewolves in the title of the movie, you'd think it'd be a horror movie, but really this is way, way, way more of a comedy than it is a horror movie. Dan liked it. I didn't think it was awful. But I'm not going to rewatch it either. So I take that. I'm completely lukewarm on Werewolves Within. And that's really the only genre thing I've been watching.
All right. Sounds good. For me, I mean, I've only genre thing I've been watching is on the recommendation of my friend Carrie. Was Rick and Morty. So I'm now on season 3 and episode 3 is where I'll be going on to next. And so far the show's pretty good. Again,
I've heard nothing but good things about it, but I just haven't gotten to it.
Yeah. I don't think it's for everybody, no doubt, but it is, it's a pretty solid show. I actually thought season one, I know a lot of people saying this, the later seasons is where the show really gets into swing, but I think I like season one for mostly the best as a whole, if we have to look at the seasons, just for the fact that it takes place more on Earth. And I thought that those episodes were pretty solid. But yeah, it's a good show, and I have to thank again my friend Carrie for getting me into it. And it's a recommend if you like science fiction, comedy, and animation. Let's go with you, Barry.
So we binged last weekend or last week and weekend a show called Harrow that started in 2018. It is an Australian television show.
How do you spell that?
H A R R O W, Harrow.
Okay.
Oh, Harrow.
I just want to make sure I was hearing you right.
Yeah, it's a little, it's got kind of shadows of Dexter to it. It's a very interesting show about a pathologist. I really like it. It's got Ian Gruffudd, I don't know if I'm saying his name right, as the main character. And nobody else that I recognize. But it's well worth watching. I don't know if there'll be more seasons, but I would say my favorite of the three seasons was season two. But the first two seasons are really great, and the third is pretty good.
All right, sounds good. And that's on Netflix, you said?
Where are we watching? I think we were watching on Hulu.
Oh, Hulu, okay. Yeah. Okay.
Hulu has become my favorite streaming service.
It's pretty solid, no doubt. Yeah, that's where I'm watching Rick and Morty, as a matter of fact. So yeah, it's pretty solid. Anything else, Barrett?
No.
Right. Though there is some news about Hulu.
Yes.
It sucks. They're jumping the price up for $1 to $6.99.
Oh, for the ad-supported version?
For the ad-supported version.
Yeah, yeah, that's my problem with it. So
yeah. Yeah. So yeah, that's pretty sickening that the Warner Brothers and Disney need to charge an extra $1 to everybody and still force you to watch ads if you get that version.
Or you just
of
pay for the ad-free version like I do.
I wanted to get the ad-free, and my wife was like, no, I don't mind the commercials. I'm like, okay, God.
Oh, I can't. I honestly think advertising is bad for you, so I try and avoid it whenever I can.
Well, that makes it more insulting that they're charging us an extra $1 and still forcing you to watch advertising.
You're the one watching it. You have an option to watch it ad-free.
Well, yeah, but there was no reason for them to raise the price when they're already making money from the advertisers.
Right.
It's to make more money.
Right. That's the problem, because enough is not enough. It's got to be more.
What evidence have you seen in your entire life of Disney actually giving a shit about its customers?
Or even the people that work for them.
That too.
Yeah, that's
awful.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, it's a shame.
Talk to Alan Dean Foster about how they won't pay him
in the industry. So,
what was that last thing, Eric?
I was just going to say, and they own 75% of the entertainment industry now, so we're all fucked in a few years.
Yep.
Yeah. I'm actually surprised that they allowed that, because me and Barrett worked for a company that was going to buy another company out, and the federal government came in and nixed it, and yet they let Disney buy everything out, and they don't
nix it. Like, I can't believe they allowed the Fox merger to go through. I also work for a company that likes to acquire other companies, and the DOJ partially nixed one of our deals.
Yeah, so it just shows you that
clearly Disney has very, very good lobbyists.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because there's no reason they would allow a media company to take over the entire world and then nix other companies from doing other mergers. So yeah, that's the problem with the federal government is they're not consistent.
That's because different people run it at different times, so it's never consistent.
And it's also who gets the better lobbyists and pay off.
It's all about money.
Yeah. We're getting closer to a shadow run, corporate run government.
And you know what? Ned Beatty in Network was right. There are no countries. It's just corporations.
It's true.
We're getting there yeah. for sure.
Yeah, it's pathetic when Disney is wealthier than 80% of all the countries in Europe. I mean, that's just those are first world countries too. It just makes no sense.
And Amazon is more rich than Disney, isn't it?
Yeah, I think you're right.
I don't know off the top of my head.
I think Amazon's on track to be the first $1 trillion company.
Didn't Apple already bust a trillion?
Maybe.
I don't think so.
Either way, Apple, Amazon, Disney, Verizon, Comcast, you know, they're all like,
yep. Ridiculous.
Nobody cares about us. Just remember it.
You're right. No one cares about us.
And that's why I don't care if they have my metrics. They're going to get them.
Doing it for you. They're doing it for your money.
Right.
Yeah. That's true. Damn.
Anywho.
All right. So that was the news I had. So I guess we're all done with the news and what we've been watching. So I guess we can get into our final thoughts on this film. But before we do, Eric, you actually do another podcast with your buddy Dan.
I do. It's a general interest podcast called the Askancy Podcast. That's spelled A-S-K-A-N-C-I-T-Y. You can find it wherever you got this one.
Excellent. And Barrett, me and you just released an episode on a different podcast.
Yes, we released Pig, right? That was the last one that you released.
That's right, yeah.
And it's on the Halloween Boutique Psychotronic Reviews, part of the Dark Discussions Network. And next we will be taking a look at Jungle Cruise.
Oh. That's right. Emily Blunt. Emily Blunt.
Doesn't matter.
Well, it does matter to me, Emily Blunt.
That's because you're the only man that doesn't know how to find porn on the internet.
No, Emily Blunt is my Hollywood crush. Come on, nothing wrong with a Hollywood crush. Come on, dude, it's Emily Blunt. Anyway,
so what?
Anyway, all right. So that sounds good. So, and Eric, me, you, and Mike are doing a episode later this month, theoretically, on another podcast about a film.
Sure.
Details, please.
I don't want to promise the people anything because you keep on fucking. We've been trying to do this episode for almost a year now.
Has it been that long?
That's a long time.
Right. Well, either way, it's a Cinema a la Carte, which is a side podcast that myself, Eric, and Mike do, where we discuss films that are adjacent to Dark Discussions topics. So films that may or may not fit into Dark Discussions, but are films that interest us and may interest our listeners. So check those episodes out as they come out. The next one to come out will be called Jack Reacher. That one's coming out.
Oh my God! When did we record that?
A long time ago.
Yeah.
But it's coming out. It's coming out. So cool. Start looking for that within the next 30 days. And I guess now we can get into our final thoughts on Gaia. So I will start. This is a good film. I think this film could be a top 20 best horror film of the year. May slip into the top 10. Never know. When I do my reevaluation at the end. But put it this way, it's worthy enough to be considered a top 20 film, which makes it, in my opinion, a thumbs up. So, yes, check it out. It's available on VOD to buy or to rent. It is not streaming anywhere for free yet, at least in the North America or the United States, I should say. But you can rent it for around $5.99, $6.99, or you can purchase it for $14.99. Eric?
I also really like this movie. I would recommend purchasing it so you can watch it more than once. Because I personally found a second watch to be very gratifying in that instead of just trying to figure out what's happening, you can stop focusing on the events and start focusing on the meaning. It's a movie that I think that can be, like we did tonight, looked at from any number of angles, and it's really, really interesting. So, yes, I highly recommend this movie.
All right, very good. And what about you, Barrett?
Yes, I really, really like the filmography. I like the soundtrack. I like the acting. I love this movie. It's actually in my top 5 of the year right now.
All right, sounds good. So that's our thoughts on this film here. Once again, the film is called Gaia, I would think, is how it's pronounced. Jacob Bauer, or Bauer, is the director. Tertius Kopp is the screenwriter. Stars Monique Rockman, Karel Nell, Alex Van Dyke, and Anthony Asayemi. The film became available everywhere on VOD, at least in the United States, on June 18th and June 25th, I should say. And it is getting good reviews, and all three of us liked it. So with all that stated, Irk, why don't you lead us out?
All right. Thanks for tuning in. Let's just talk about Gaia. Come back next week. We'll have another topic.